I'm calling the Education Committee to order. It is 8 a.m. on Wednesday, March 13, 2024. Committee members present today are Representative Prox, Representative McKay, Representative Hemshoot, my co-chair, Representative Ruffridge, and myself, Representative Allard. We do have a, and Representative Story. We do have a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to silence and turn off your cell phones. And the staff we have with us today is Linda with the House Records and Doug with the LIO. And we have two agenda items today, HB 55 Extend Workforce Invest Board Allocations by Representative Carrick. And we have HB 274 Screening Reading Intervention K3 by House Rules, but by request of the governor. Our first item of business today is going to be HB 55, Extend Workforce Invest Board Allocations by Representative Carrick. This is the second hearing of the bill, and we have already heard the sponsor's presentation, and we've taken public testimony. Our office did not receive any amendments by the deadline. There is a proposed committee substitute. Can I have a motion to move HB 55 CS version in order for discussion, please?
Yes, thank you. I move we adopt CS for House Bill number 55, Work Order 33-LS0360/R.
And I would like to object.
Thank you. Labor and Workforce Development Commissioner Ms. Munoz, I've asked her as a favor to me, as I am low staff, to present the CS version. She is remaining neutral in this. I've just asked her to do it as a introduction so folks understand it, and that is all. So, Commissioner Munoz, if you could put your name on the record and begin, and then we can ask Ms. Commissioner Munoz for questions, and hopefully she can do that. We also have members online. Not members, we have individuals. So we have Doug, Dawn Etheridge, AFL-CIO in the room as well, and we could put questions towards them. We also have Director of Division of Employment, Director of AK Vocational Technical Center, and Department of Education is here as well. Okay. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Allard and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Munoz, Commissioner Designee for the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Also on the line today is the Division of Employment and Training Services Director, Paloma Harbor. Director Harbor oversees the 14 Job Center Network, as well as the Alaska Workforce Investment Board Chair, Executive Director, Dirk Kraft. So just in quick summary, the TVET program is in part administered through the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. All of the non-state grantees are administered through the AWIB. That would include the Alaska Technical Center, Admonson, Ilisavik College, NACTEC, Partners for Progress in Delta, SAVIC out in Bristol Bay, and Ute Ilut Narviat. The total TVET funding for FY23 was $13.7 million. The program is funded through the employee share, which is the half a percent tax is the employee share. And of that half a percent, one third approximately goes toward the TVET program. So to walk through the CS would change the designation or the allocation from 0.16 to 0.25. As I said, the current designation generates approximately $13.7 million in the previous fiscal year. This would generate approximately $10 million in the year coming forward, additional funding. In Section 2, the program is extended from June 30th, 2015 to It's extended rather to 2026 from 2024. And a new designation is added to the named recipients, the Alaska Job Center Network, which provides individual training support through the job centers. And this would provide an allocation for that work. And then there's additional compliance language that a penalty can be, that funding can be withheld up to 100% if the accountability measures are not complied with. Madam Chair, those are the changes, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any questions for the Commissioner? Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you, through the Chair. So we're...
Representative Prox, before you begin, I just want members of the community and the committee to know she is here neutrally, just to ask, answer questions in a neutral manner.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Through the Chair. So we're...
And I just
increasing the allocation by about...
Go ahead.
40%?
Approximately, well, yes, roughly. Mm-hmm. It would increase the funding by approximately $10 million for a total of roughly $23 million total for the program.
About how many people benefit from that program, if you could remind me, please?
Approximately 8,800, according to the audit that was conducted by Legislative Audit.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody, Representative Ruffridge, please.
Thank you. And if this is not a neutral question, then please don't answer it. But the Alaska Workforce Investment Board gets mentioned a number of times in the bill. And I think there was, concern in our previous hearing just in regards to sort of that flow of dollars. Is it happening, at the level that it should? Is the AWIB board, in your estimation, capable of either handling this program, in doing increased grant requests, or in that case, would they be capable of handling it as a total grant program rather than as these percentages that are here in the CS?
So as a competitive grant program, is that what you're implying?
Yes, ma'am.
The Alaska Workforce Investment Board oversees the STEP program, the competitive grant program for the STEP, which is State Training and Employment Program. That's approximately $6 million a year, which is funded through the same source of revenue. Yes, they are capable of handling a competitive grant program through TVEP or to continue in the current role as an administrator for the named recipients.
Thank you. Follow up, if I may?
Please.
Thank you. So the other question I had would be, the increase in the amount to 0.25, and potentially we can have other testimony from the managers of that fund, but would that fund be solvent or be able to have its intended purpose with the increased dollar amount in your estimation?
Sure. Currently, the balance of the UI Trust Fund is $650 million. Prior to the pandemic, it was approximately $500 million. And at the lowest point, during the pandemic, when the greatest impact was happening on the fund dropped to $267 million. It quickly rebounded after the pandemic to $500 million and is now at $650 million. And so the minimum taxes for 75% of businesses around the state are in place. That's a minimum of 1%. We're collecting more revenue now than the anticipated benefit payment out of the fund.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Story, and I just wanted to remind those that we do have a few other people that will do invited testimony. And if you have questions for them, we can do that too.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. Through the Chair, welcome. I called you a representative, which you used to be. Thank you very much for being here. It would help me if you could explain how this new program would work. And my question is, are you going to be authorizing grants through this, if this should happen, through the 7% for for other post-secondary institutions, or how do you see this money being used?
Thank you for the
question. Before you begin, I already put on record, but I don't know if I was loud enough. Representative McCormick showed up at 8:05. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Story. Currently, the Job Center Network, we have 13 job centers, brick and mortar, and one itinerant job center in Kotzebue. We, through those job centers, provide individual training support through federal and state funding. The STEP program, in part, we allocate approximately $1 million through STEP that's disseminated through the job centers. The same program or intention would be in place with these funds if a portion of TVET money went to the job centers for training support. It would be done in the same way. And yes, it would go out to training providers around the state, not just the named recipients on the list.
Follow up, please. Through the chair, I need a little bit more explanation. I thought you said it would go out individual grants, but that it still goes to the institutions. Could you help me with that, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. It would go to the individual and their choice of institution. So it would pay, for instance, if they were going to Northern Industrial Training in Palmer, we would pay a grant for their training, the individual grant at an institution of their choice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Prock, can I go to Representative Henshute first, please? Go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner Munoz, and if this isn't a neutral enough question, just you can decline, but was this CS written according to the guidelines of the audit that we received? Or I guess the recommendations in the audit.
I can answer.
Chris, if I can, okay. I'm sorry, you can answer.
No, but, go ahead, Commissioner. I don't
want to share it. Chris Curtis is here, the ledge auditor, so I would direct questions to the audit to Ms. Curtis. But the audit identified that the accounting measures in the statute are in conflict really with the named recipient, the structure. So there's two sections of statute. One is written as if it was a competitive process, and one is a direct grant to the institution. So they're a little bit disjointed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Follow up? Representative Prox?
No, thank you. That was basically what I was trying to.
Okay. And Commissioner, I think we should probably ask if the Director of Division of Employment would like to speak. Are you?
Sure. Is she online? Yes. Paloma Harbor, Director Harbor.
Ms. Harbor, would you like to give your invited testimony?
Good morning. Yes. Thank you, Chair Ellard. For the record, Paloma Harbor, Division of Employment and Training Services Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I was on for questions only, but I will speak to just the way the program works now. As the commissioner mentioned, we do give grants to individuals that come in through our job centers looking for employment and where they might need some training to help them in their career goals. And so those grants can support their training costs. They can also provide supportive services while they're in training so that they can afford to go to training, help them with housing or transportation or other costs they might have while in training.
Thank you. Are there any more questions for folks? Oh, Representative Prox, please.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, is there some sort of an advisory board? I'm just kind of getting how this works, that evaluates the program as you go along, or is that just within the Department of Labor?
I'm sorry, the Alaska Workforce Investment Board regularly updates the high demand job areas of the state and where where we need to target training support. The named recipients are required to provide an annual report to the AWEB, to quantify the programs and the number of students that are being served in those programs. And we also have online the executive director from AWIB if you have specific questions for him.
I think that'll be good. Thank you.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. And through the chair, I think I actually have a very similar question to Representative Prox, and it really does have to do with the audit, the named recipients, which really don't change at all in the CS, other than the addition of one and a slight change in the percentages. And we can ask this question again to the AWIB board representative, but in the time of since the last audit and since this sunset was last approved, do you feel pretty confident that the named recipients in here are accomplishing their goal of providing the service at the level high enough to maintain their percentages?
I think, for instance, the university does a fantastic job in directing TVET money toward vocational training programs around the state. I can speak to AvTech. AvTech receives 17% of the funding, and I think we do a very good job as well in responding to high-demand industry needs in our training, their short-term trainings. I can't speak to some of the smaller schools specifically. I would refer to the director on that question, but I can speak broadly that it is a very effective program, and many Alaskans are getting trained through these funds.
Thank you.
I'm just going to do a quick follow-up on that, and I think part of the issue was, Commissioner, was that we were told that the funds weren't being distributed equally amongst the entire state, and the CS would actually be able to do that based on designating out to the labor centers. And you said there is a director online. Is it LeCompte or?
Director LeCompte is from AvTech, and she's prepared to provide a presentation on the programming at AvTech and how TVEP supports AvTech. But also on the line is Dirk Kraft from the Alaska Workforce Investment Board.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go with Ms. LeCompte, can you give your invited testimony and your presentation for us?
Certainly. Good morning, Chair Allard and members of the committee for inviting me to testify and share with you about AvTech. For the record, I'm Kathy LeCompte. I'm the Division Director at the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. We are a division of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And you should have in front of you a slide deck, and I will move to slide two right now. If I may?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I'd like to illustrate exactly where AvTech falls in the grand scheme of things. We are part of the workforce at Labor and Workforce Development Department. We are a division that provides workforce development. We've been doing this for over 50 years, and the impact that we have had has been to train thousands of Alaskans for work and gainful employment. We are proudly owned and operated by the state of Alaska. Division.
Can you stand by for just a moment? We're kind of hearing you in and out. I don't know if you have us on speaker or maybe AirPods. Can you repeat what you said, please?
Certainly, Chair Allard. Hang on just one second. Let me.
Thank you.
How is this?
And then if you could put your name back on the record.
Sure. Is this better?
This is much better. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, certainly. For the record, I'm Kathy LeCompte. I'm the Division Director at the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. We're a division of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. So on slide two, I was just saying how AvTech is part of the department. And in this structure, we are owned and operated by the state of Alaska and proudly have trained thousands of Alaskans for gainful employment over the last 50 years. On slide three is a brief explanation about AvTech. We're located in the small community of Seward. It's a great starting point for Alaskans from smaller communities as we have no stoplights. Everyone looks out for each other, and just 2 hours from Anchorage, we're very accessible. Students live on campus in single occupancy rooms. They eat all their meals in the cafeteria, socialize and play in the student center. Our quality of programming and accountability is ensured through national accreditation with the Council on Occupational Education, who hold us to 10 quality standards for education. We're proud of our statistics for student success. Over 90% of the students who come to AvTech complete training, and of those completers, over 90% are employed. And we are bound by our accreditation to work with those students and ensure that they are gainfully employed up to 18 months after they complete their training. As a Title IV school, that means that we can accept federal Pell Grants, loans, scholarships, and sponsorships. And we're very proud that about 6% of AvTech students have to access student loans. That's a very low number, and their average debt load is just a little over $6,000 per student. So if they have to access a student loan, their debt load is low, and when they come out of AvTech, generally they're making a fairly decent salary where they can pay those loans off. Next slide, please, is number 4. This slide just demonstrates that we have served in the last fiscal year over 1,300 students. And although most of our students, because of proximity, come from the Gulf Coast, Kenai Peninsula and Kodiak, and the Anchorage Matsu region, we do serve a statewide mission, and we welcome Alaskans from every economic region in the state. Slide number 5 is an explanation of how we do business at AvTech. We are different in that we are a clock hour school, not credit hours. And in 90 or 180 day terms, students participate in over 600 to 1200 hours, depending on the term, of classroom seat time. They practice skills in the shops, and they apply lessons learned in a simulated workplace learning lab. This accelerated model provides training at 1/2 the cost in 1/3 of the time of traditional post-secondary education. We have subject matter expert instructors from industry that provide training to equip Alaskans with what we call cross-cutting trade-specific skills and employability behaviors needed for entry-level work, job upgrades for advancement in a career, or continuing education just to upskill for a current job. So as an example, in our diesel mechanic program, when our students are complete, they can go into a variety of industries because they have a diesel mechanic background. They can work in the maritime industry. They can work in the tourism industry on buses. They can work in the mining industry or the oil and gas industry on heavy equipment. So our students have choice of industries once they've completed their training. We also have a full complement of staff at AvTech that support students with life skills training. They get financial literacy, how to rent an apartment, how to show up on time. We have counselors that provide them support if they're homesick. We have a full complement of recreation activities, and we have a career development counselor who helps the students hone their skills in interviewing and writing their resumes. Slide 6 is just an overview of our training program. AvTech is home to the Alaska Maritime Training Center and the Alaska Culinary Academy. The training center, the Maritime Training Center, is a U.S. Coast Guard approved training center. We have full mission bird simulators, and we provide opportunities for mariners to train in a low-risk, fully simulated environment. We partner with the University of Alaska in the Alaska Maritime Education Consortium. Our mission is to expand maritime training across the state, and together we do that. Our consortium was designated in FY21 as a center of excellence, and again in 2024, we proudly carry the designation of domestic center of excellence for maritime training and workforce development, and that was granted by the Federal Marine Administration, or MARAD. And in our culinary program, we are fast-tracking our students in 90-day training for upcoming hospitality season and year-round employment. Next slide, please, is number 7. This highlights our diesel, heavy, and welding programs. They still continue to be our most sought-after programs. We have 2 start dates because of the demand. We start in August, graduate in May. We start in January, and they graduate in December. So we're putting diesel mechanics and welders into the workforce twice a year. Our business and office technology program is the program that has the most articulation agreements with the university. We partner with them so that the students that come to AvTech can earn college credits if they so choose. We specifically partner with the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Southeast in our medical office assistant networking technician, and administrative office assistant. This opportunity provides students with the access to reduced rates of tuition if they would like to get credits at the university and continue on their education. Or they can just take what they learn in AvTech and go right to work. Next slide is number 8. This highlights our energy and building trades, which is our construction technology, industrial electricity, plumbing and heating, and refrigeration. We started in the last couple of years building tiny homes as our training lab, so students get a chance to work on the tiny homes, from framing to electrical to plumbing to siding to roofing and turning on the lights and turning on the water. And we have been doing this for the last few years, and we crank out 2 to 3 of those each year. And in collaboration with the City of Seward, our refrigeration program will be adding environmentally friendly heat pump installation and maintenance for residential houses. And we're very proud to have that partnership and to be able to expand to that emerging technology and training. And the next slide just highlights other things that we do at AvTech in workforce training. We've been in the apprenticeship business for over 20 years, providing accessible online related technical instruction for small to medium-sized businesses. We've recently expanded to offer registered apprenticeships in information technology. We are the only provider of that in the state, and that is a slowly growing but popular apprenticeship where students learn the ins and outs of setting up networks and desktop support while on the job in that learn and earn model. We also provide customized training. We've been providing power plant operator training in collaboration with the Alaska Energy Authority for many years, and that helps to keep the lights on in the small communities in Alaska. And we also have added to our complement of short training and customized training a residential building and maintenance. And in collaboration with Trident Seafoods, we offer these short customized training for their facilities maintenance employees. And then if the employees want to come back, they come back to AvTech for a deeper dive in one of the other topics of interest to them. Next slide. This is just an illustration of the impact of the TBEF funds at AvTech. We receive approximately $2.3 million plus in TBEF funding. It is 17% of the overall AvTech budget. Next slide. Interestingly enough, we receive 17% of the total TBEF budget, which is 17% of AvTech's budget. So it's very easy to remember that statistic, but it's very impactful for us. We have we are a great return on investment. You will see in the far right corner the cost per participant of use of the TBEF funds. And we value those funds. We need those funds, and it's really critical in helping us fulfill the mission to train Alaskans for work. And then the last slide is just a list of the priority industries. And like I spoke before, we have students that go into all of these industries from the variety of training programs that we offer. There's not any one industry that we work with. We provide training to Alaskans that choose the industry that they want to go into for their careers and that aligns with all the priority industries identified by the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. And then the last slide is contact information for the commissioner and myself. And again, I thank you, and I'm welcoming any questions.
Thank you. And we do look like we have a question for you, Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. LeComp, do you have somebody specifically doing outreach to, I guess, the industries that you serve?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, yes, we do. We have a staff of individuals who reach out to industry partners, and also to the high schools through their college and career fairs, Plus, we have relationships with the career and technical education directors and instructors at the school districts, and work through the associations such as CHAR, the Alaska Mining Association, and other associations to connect with employers to help them with their workforce development needs.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
On slide number 10, there is a group called Other. Is that industry funding, more or less?
That, through the chair, Representative Prox, that Other is our, we do interagency agreements because we work with the Alaska Marine Highway. We work with the Alaska Energy Authority. We get receipts from AWIB. That's where our TVEP funding will appear. And we also benefit from the education tax credit, and those funds go into the statutory designated funds. So that's what the Other makes up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Story has a question for you. If you could put your name back on the record when you come back online, Ms. LeCompte. Go ahead, Representative Story.
Sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. Through the chair, thank you, Ms. LeCompte, for all your work and for being here today. When I look at the budget on page 10, I see through this proposed bill that you will lose, I think it's 2% of your TVAP funds. How is your fund balance, and what impact will that have?
For the record, Kathy LeCompte, Director of APTEC, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, through the chair, Representative Story. If the TVEP is not reauthorized, we will lose about $2.3 million out of our budget, which is 17% of our budget, and it would require us to discontinue some of our programming that we offer if we had to reduce by 17% our funding. I hope that answers your question.
Follow-up. Thank you, Ms. LeCompte. You misunderstood my question. On the current proposal, your funding would go from the 17% to 15%. So you'd be losing 2% of your current funds.
Representative Story. Ms. LeCompte, I believe the commissioner would like to chime in right now. Go ahead, Commissioner Munoz.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Representative, if the CS were adopted and became law, then the overall allocation would increase because the designation goes from 0.16 to 0.25.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Is Ms. Representative Hemshute?
Thank you. Through the chair, Director LeCompte, I had an incredible experience at APTEC this summer. Thank you for the invitation. The culinary arts students provided the meal. It was fantastic. I have two questions. One is for you, and then I think one is for the commissioner. So, Director LeCompte, on slide 5, one of the things that impressed me the most in my visit was the care and attention given to the counseling needs of students. Can you outline your ratio of counselors and break that down for us? You have a 90% completion rate and 90% placement rate, so those are huge. What is your ratio of mental health counselors and career guides to the number of students served?
For the record, Kathy LeCompte, Director of APTEC, through the chair, Representative Hemshute. We have two counselors dedicated to providing mental health support for our students. And these are the students that are at APTEC for the 90 to 180 days. And it runs anywhere from 125 to 150 students, depending on the year and the time of year. So they have a ratio of about 1 to 75. But we also have a career counselor who adds to that. And we also have a student services department head that also supports the students and the counselors. We have a One of our counselors is a mental health first aid trainer who is in the process of providing training to all of our staff so that instructors, cafeteria staff, dormitory staff all have the awareness of how to identify a student that might be in trouble.
Follow up.
Thank you so much for that. Through the chair, the mental health first aid trainer is not a separate person. That's one of your other four, correct?
Through the chair, representative, yes, that's true. That is true.
Okay, thank you so much.
Additional question?
Yes, one more question. Okay, thank you. Through the chair, on slide 11, I think this question is directed at the commissioner. It really stands out on this chart, the value we're getting for AvTech and I think for the university and some of the other programs. I'm concerned about a program that has $54,820 per student. Can you speak to that, please?
Madam Chair, Representative, you're speaking to one of the named recipients. I don't have the slide deck in front of me.
Which recipient it is?
Sure, that one is Amundsen Educational Center.
Amundsen. I would defer to the director of AWIB specifically since they have oversight on that grant. I'm not directly familiar with that, with the Amundsen program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is that Ms. LeCompte?
That would be Director Dirk Kraft.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and let Dirk Kraft, if you wanted to go ahead and answer that, and we do have two more invited testimonies that we could get through. And if you guys have questions, we can direct them at the correct person. Director Kraft, if you could answer that question, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dirk Kraft, Director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. Representative Himshu, could you repeat the question?
Sure. Thank you, through the chair, Director. My question is, in the slide deck that we have that you may not have in front of you, on page 11, there's a chart of the TVEP allocations and the named recipients and the total number of participants and the funding, the investment per participant. And they're modest investments between, on the low end is just under 1,000, only 772, and then a lot more that are in the $1,000 to $2,000 range. And then it jumps up with one named recipient to 54,820, and that's such an outlier, it really draws my eye. Can you speak to that program?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Henshute. The reporting requirements are laid out in statute, and so we get those back from each named recipient. It's all formula funds, so we don't have a say in a lot of the programmatic funding. They follow our industry priorities that are laid out by the board. And so they distribute those funds, the training funds, based on the priorities we have. But otherwise, we're processing reimbursements as long as they're in alignment with regulation and statute. So I couldn't speak for the institution.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, it might help to put it in context. What does the Amundsen Educational Center focus on?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, it was formerly New Frontier Vocational Technical Center. It's a nonprofit voc ed school in Soldotna, Kenai Peninsula. It focuses on training rural Alaskans for entry-level business, construction, medical office occupations. They have a few programs. They have a residential construction internship, residential construction diploma, and I think advanced residential construction as well. And they partner with a few people, Bristol Bay Economic Development Association, Bristol Bay Newport, Covenant House, and a couple others.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Rufford.
Thank you. Through the chair, I guess my question is in regards to the bill, but also this section that you just mentioned in statute. I think it's currently in letter E regarding the expenditure and performance reports from the department. In the current CS, The recommendation is that if a program does not meet the requirements laid out in E, that they would have 100% of their funds withheld the following year. Currently, that's at 20%. Has the AWIB board ever withheld the 20% from any of the programs since the previous audit?
Mr. Chair, again, Dirk Kraft, Director of the Workforce Investment Board. To my knowledge, no.
And follow up, if I may.
Please.
And in your time there, do you think that there's any programs that have not followed the items listed out in E, or are most of the programs following that to the letter of the law?
Chair Ruckridge, I've been here approximately 5 months, but I have asked. I talked to some past directors. I've asked around for asked staff that have been here a long time, and the items you mentioned laid out in E are basically reporting requirements. So, to my knowledge, they've gotten the information back to our research and analysis department that gets put into the annual report, and I don't think that they've withheld any information. RNA will basically ask the questions laid out in statute, and then they'll report back to them, and it gets put in the report.
Okay, last follow-up, if I may. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So in our audit, this might actually be for the commissioner, this had to do with the job and wage information, which is a requirement under E, and that seems to be a component that is missing from anyone's program, but I don't see that requirement is removed in the current CS. Is that a requirement that should be removed, or is that something that the department will be adding at some point going forward?
Through the chair, it's a requirement that I certainly would like to see as part of the annual reporting, and it could be included in the CS, yes.
Okay, sorry, follow up again.
Yes, please, go ahead.
So it actually is a requirement currently in the report. It's required by statute to be in the report, but it seems in the audit, and maybe we can ask Ms. Curtis this question, but one of the components that are laid out is that training providers do not have access to job and wage information, and that would be the Department of Labor and Workforce Development's research and analysis section that would actually have to participate in the management of these programs by giving that information to the programs. They don't actually keep that information. So I guess my concern would be, unless there's some sort of partnership or some sort of plan, that by the letter of the law, none of these programs in the next year would receive funds because they're not able to do the things that are in statute currently. And I just wondered if either the AWIB board or you would be able to speak to that and address that
question. I think Director Kraft, if he's available to address that question.
Director Kraft, can you answer that question for Representative Ruffridge?
Yes, Chair Ruffridge. So was the question, would we be able to work with RNA to add the additional sections of that report to the annual report?
I think my question is, so I'll read it directly from statute. So it's E3, and this is just in the section regarding TVEP directly, Article 6 and Title 23, but it says the percentage of, so they need to have on number one, the percentage of former participants in the program who have jobs 1 year after leaving the program. Two, the median wage of the former participant 7 to 12 months after leaving the program. And then three, the percentage of former participants who were employed after leaving the program and received training under the program that was related or somewhat related to the former participant job 7 to 12 months after leaving the program. There is these items are typically, I think, items that the department would keep or the workforce investment board, not necessarily the programs that are named recipients in statute. Because in my reading of their reports to the legislature, most of them, with the exception of, I think, the university, who has access to, I think, more data than most, they are not able to do this. And so I worry that as the statute is written, well, one, they haven't been reduced of their funding in the past few years, anyone, but the statute now would read that they would lose 100% of their funding. So I guess I'm just trying to find clarity to how these first three things in statute would be accomplished unless the Department of Labor and Workforce Development or the AWIP board was involved in the reporting somehow.
Did you want to take a stab at that, Director Kraft?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Co-Chair Ruffridge. Yeah, those reporting requirements listed out in the section you mentioned. AWIB, we directly manage 7 of the 10 TDAP recipients, and that involves processing reimbursements for their programs. To get the reports that we need for that statute, RNA asks those seven training recipients for those numbers annually, and they get it back and publish it in the report. Since we're not doing direct monitoring of their programs, we don't have that information that you mentioned. We get that via RNA through the named recipients.
Yes, thank you. So, and maybe this is a question for you, Commissioner, but is there a need to have a relationship between, I'm uncertain how the named recipients in statute now, much less in the ones in the CS, are able to accomplish letter E lines 1 through 3 without assistance from the department. I'm not certain how they follow up on individuals 7 to 12 months after leaving their program. And maybe, you know, that, but certainly in the audit that is clearly mentioned that grantees are struggling to accomplish these things. And so our performance metrics are lacking. And the current CS would say, well, in the space of lacking performance metrics, you would get no money. So that's a concern.
So I would say that through the unemployment insurance, I mean, through the Employment Security Tax Division, that we would have access to wage data. I would have to go back to the team really to see how that would work, you know, because there is protected information in some cases. The director of the Employment and Training Services is on the line, which also oversees the Employment Security Division, and she may have specific ideas on how we would do that. But certainly we have access to that data, and it could be connected in terms of the performance measures, I believe. I know I would, again, have to go back to the team to make sure that we were following the law and not providing information that we were not allowed to.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I'm going to go ahead and do the invited testimony for Mr. Thomas Lance. He's president of the AK Research Consortium. Mr. Lance, would you put your name on the record and go ahead with your invited testimony, please?
Thank you. Good morning, members of the House Education Committee. My name is Thomas Lance. I live in Kodiak, and I'm the president of the Alaska Research Consortium, or ARC, a statewide nonprofit that was formed about 6 years ago. ARC supports Alaska's seafood industry and communities as an advocate for workforce training and research. We collaborate with public and private entities, including AFTEC, especially through the Kodiak Seafood Marine Science Center. KFMSC was previously named the Fishery Industrial Technology Center and built in 1991 with EVO settlement funds on land donated by the city of Kodiak. The mission of the old FITC, now KSMSC, is outlined in Alaska Statute Title 16, Chapter 52, which reads in part, the center shall create employment opportunities in the state's fishing industry and other benefits to the state by training, technical assistance, and research and development. Recently, ARC assessed seafood workforce training needs. The details are in a final report titled Alaska's Seafood Future Action Agenda, found on our website at alaskaresearchconsortium.org. These seafood workforce jobs are career-level, well-paid positions, which should be held by Alaskans. The state's TVEP fund has been an essential resource in responding to these documented needs. For example, in 2023, seafood workers contributed over $740,000 to the TVEP program, or 9% of the total. Alaska Sea Grant is a university NOAA partnership that operates KSMSC and has used KeyVep as a resource to develop training for seafood the workforce. In 2023, 400 seafood workers received training from Sea Grant at KSMSC. Here we have in Alaska a place created to meet those needs. We have clear documentation of the need for training, and we have a source of industry-generated funds that can push this training forward in partnership with TVEP. We encourage you to pass House Bill 55 and to reauthorize TVEP to support our state's workforce, seafood workforce, and its contribution to the blue economy of coastal Alaska. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And then we're going to have Mr. Commissioner, I think we're going to swap seats with you. We'll just take a brief at ease. You're welcome. At ease. To order, we are going to invite Mr. Don Etheridge with the AFL-CIO, and he's going to put his invited testimony on the record. If you could please introduce yourself and begin your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the Education Committee. Don Etheridge with the AFL-CIO.
Mr. Etheridge, can you move your mic in front of you, please? Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And I've been involved with the Alaska Works Partnership for many years, and this is one of our pet projects that we keep supporting is the TVAP. We were in on the original conception of it. Original conception is as of when we first started it, started off as a competitive grant program, and before it got through the legislature, it became designated as it worked through committees. Everybody had to add their own little part to it. But we are fully supportive of the TVAP. We like to see the fact that we're bringing a lot of young folks into the programs and getting them trained up and getting them started on a career. One of the biggest training problems that we work through with our apprenticeship programs is trying to teach the first year is just teaching people to show up to work on time with their equipment and ready to go to work. And that's one of our biggest training. And a lot of these programs, that's the main thing that they teach is to show up on work at on time and hopefully sober.
Okay.
But we're fully supportive of it. The CS, I believe we should be looking at expanding the STEP program to put those funds that are designated to the department under STEP. That's what that program sounds just like what we do under STEP right now. So, but we are supportive of TVEP expansion and continuing on with the program.
Thank you, Mr. Etheridge. So how do you feel about the $10 million increase?
I get concerned, but I've heard for years, oh, we don't ever have to worry about it because we've got so much money. Well, that last pandemic, we started to get worried about it. So I think that a modest increase, I have no problem with. But I think that we need to keep a close eye on it.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Etheridge? Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. Welcome, Mr. Etheridge. Thank you. So you had testified that the original intention would be competitive programs. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, please?
When we were first working on putting this together, we were working with the Alaska Work Partnership, AFL-CIO, and a few other organizations, and that was the intent when it was originally put out, was to make it a grant system that would go out there. But it changed as it was going through the process.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
So was the intention to go to post-secondary training institutions, or did you visualize it going out as an individual grants the way this new proposal is channeled?
Our original idea was that it would go out to different nonprofit training groups so that they could bring in the funds that is hard for them to come up with, and such as the ones that are on the list now, they have a hard time getting the funding that's necessary. And I fully support it going to AvTech because that's a great program. I've put two kids through it myself, so I think that's a really good program, and it's able to keep the tuition down and make it affordable by being able to put those funds into AvTech and university programs and so forth.
Representative Hemchut.
Thank you, Chair Allard. I can ask this question of Mr. Etheridge, but it might be for the commissioner, so I'll just ask the question then. Since this program was created, are you aware of any vocational education or career technical education centers that have opened in the 20 years since the program was created?
I'm not aware of any, no.
Thank you. Miss, do you have a follow-up? Or?
If I may?
Yes, please.
Through the chair, have you heard of the Prince of Wales Technical Education Center in Klawak?
I heard of it when they were talking about putting it into the program, and I didn't follow what that program was doing, but I pay attention to this bill every time it comes up for a renewal and something's added to it. But.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Etheridge, have you seen the Alaska Job Center Network was added 7%?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And you're in favor of that?
I think that that should be under STEP.
Okay.
That's my belief.
So, okay. I'll follow up with you on that one. All right. Is there any other questions? No? Okay. So I think we are done with our invited testimony today. So I'm going to move for an amendment deadline to be set for 3 p.m. on the 14th of March, which is Thursday. Representative Prox,
I don't think
before I continue.
Adopted the CS yet. Are we out of step?
I apologize. Can we just take a brief at ease?
Yep.
Thank you. Call the Education Committee back to order. It looks like Ms. Representative Story does have an additional question. Is Mr. Curtis in the room or is he online? Are you asking for the auditor?
To the chair. Yes, I am. But if they're not there, the commissioner might know.
Commissioner Munoz, could you come forward, please? Put your name on the record and thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Kathy Munoz.
Through the chair, my question has to do with the bill says that the money is supposed to go to institutions who are doing post-secondary or vocational education. And so when I think of the Alaska Job Center Network, I don't think of that as an institution that is putting together programs, and this money is supposed to support programs. So if you could help me understand why this should be considered an institution.
I don't think, through the chair, the job centers clearly are not an institution, but we have the ability to provide direct training support through the job centers, as we do with both the STEP funding that was just mentioned earlier and also the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act funding that follows the individual. So it's one way to get more training support to individuals and have those individuals take that money where they intend to receive the training.
Thank you for that information. Follow-up, just comments. And I don't know who could answer this question, but by our statute here, shouldn't this be going to institutions? And I believe we have had some other institutions wanting to have TVAP, and I know the competitive grant suggestion was that more institutions could
Do you have a question for a particular person? We're going to move on, and it looks like some of them have already jumped off.
Okay. I guess I would be a comment to the committee. I think that we would I'm hesitant to accept the CS because it's not funding institutions.
Oh,
and the intent.
Representative Story, if you have a direct comment, that looks like they all hop back on. So is there a question to any particular person that you would like to, or is that just your comment?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Munoz.
Madam Chair, through the chair to the Representative Story, you could add an amendment there to clarify that under institutions or entities, for instance, on page 14. I'm sorry, line 14 on page 1.
Thank you for that information.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Munoz. Moving on. Thank you. Representative Proxy, remove your objection.
I do remove my objection.
I object.
Okay, thank you. We're going to take a brief Addies. Just a minute, please. Addies. Okay. Education Committee, back on the record. Representative Story.
Yes, I'm going to remove my objection.
Okay. Thank you very much. Objection is removed. I'm going to go ahead and set the amendment deadline for 3 p.m. on 14 March, which is Thursday. It looks like a lot of folks already have amendments, and this CS has been sitting for about 30 days now. And I will then set the bill aside, and now we're going to be moving on. Yeah. And I will take a brief at ease to move on to the next bill. Brief at ease. Helping me out there. We're going to go ahead and move to adopt the CS so that we can move forward on it. And I think that's it for right now. And it would be adopt the version 33LSO360/R as a working document.
Okay. Chair Allard, what was the amendment deadline again?
Oh, thank you very much. The amendment deadline is 3 p.m. for 14 March, which is tomorrow.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, I'm going to take a brief at ease. Calling the Education Committee back to order. Let me go through my lines. If we can please have the next item today is HB 274, Screening, Reading, Intervention K-3 by House Rules by request of the governor. This is the first hearing on the bill, and we have already heard this. Oh, we're about to hear the sponsor's presentation. Okay. At this time, I'd like to open up the floor, and Commissioner Bishop, if you can go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dina Bishop, Commissioner of Education for the Department of Education and Early Development, and with me today is Director of Innovation and Education Excellence, Kathy Moffitt. You have the PowerPoint before you, and I'll just move right through it. I wanted to share the information about House Bill 274, Screening and Reading Intervention K-3, and couch this in the why this is being asked. Slide number 2, after the cover page, shares the mission, vision, and purpose, and I do like to share that the vision is what we believe we'd love to have students know and be able to do when they leave K-12 education. On slide number 3, the Alaska's Education Challenge, which is the goals outlined and the priorities of the State Board of Education. Number 1, support all students to read at grade level by the end of third grade is the context of this discussion. Today's agenda, on page 4, just shares a little bit about couching this, and I'm going to talk a little bit about data. And this committee is the first to publicly hear those data about the READS Act and the sharing of the MCLAS, which I'll finish with an individualized reading improvement plan and progression, non-progression conversations.
Commissioner Bishop, did you want your staff or anybody to read the sectional analysis prior to going into this, or are you going to, and I don't know if you wanted to read the sponsor letter on behalf of the governor.
Madam Chair, I will have Laurel Shoup come up to do that. And may I present this? I will address each of those items because they're very simple through this presentation.
I think generally, we usually have the statement first, yes, and then we have the sectional analysis, and then we can go on if you don't mind. Thank you.
Thank you.
It gives us a little bit more perspective. Thank you, Ms. Shoup. If you could put your name on the record and begin.
Good morning, Chair Allard and committee members of the House Education Committee. For the record, my name is Laurel Shoup. I am the legislative liaison for the Department of Education and Early Development. Section 1 of of HB 274 amends AS 1430-760, statewide screening and support, paragraph A, by removing language that only required students in grades K through 3 to the statewide literacy screener once in the fall if they met proficiency benchmark on the first try. By having all students take the screener 3 times a year, educators and parents can track progress throughout the year. It also allows for progress monitoring to inform additional instruction to increase reading skills beyond proficiency. Section 2 of HB 274 amends AS 1430-765, Reading Intervention Services and Strategies, Progression, paragraph F, by adjusting the date of the meeting between parents and teachers and other pertinent district staff to discuss whether a third grade student is ready for grade 4. The adjustment is from 45 days from the end of the school year to 15 days. By changing this time frame, data from the third administration of the statewide literacy screener can be used in the conversation. This additional information allows the parents to make a more informed decision regarding their child's education and better reflects the overall learning levels of students at the end of grade level.
Thank you very much. Okay, Commissioner Bishop, if you can continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Ms. Moffitt sitting next to you?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Ms. Moffitt. Welcome. We've had some challenging little things today. Thank you so much for being here, both of you. Continue.
Thank you. Appreciate that taking us to ground us in that. Slide 5 has, of course, acronyms. I don't think there's any department that is short of those, so I wanted to place this in there. And the two to really pay attention to is the BOY, beginning of the year, and the MOY, the middle of the year. I will be referring to those. So on page 6, you'll see a Reads Act overview, and just to share a little bit of information, the Reads Act actually has 4 components, but only one component is actually required. The others are voluntary, and I'm going to speak to the required component, as well as within that, there is reporting and data collection that's required. As you move to page 7, within the required component, for which this bill adjusts or speaks to, it's really on the district reading improvement plan. And within that piece, the two items that Laurel Shoup just shared have to do with the literacy screener and progression. So now I'll roll into the reason for this ask. On page 8, within the literacy screener, district staff receive explicit training for implementation of DIBELS 8, which is the name of the screener, and it's in a curriculum-based measure. It's 1-minute brief assessments. Students take 3 of them, 1 minute each, to do to really screen on basic skills and basic needs. It is done right now, statewide literacy screener for K-3. The recommendation is 3 times a year. But there is a provision at the very end that says if a child reached proficiency, I'm sorry, I had a little accent with my face this weekend, so it's hard for me to talk. If a child reaches proficiency, they would not have to participate in the middle of the year, end of the year. And I just want to share these data to demonstrate the efficacy of having a child do it 3 times a year because it's so simple as well and very short duration. So with that, page 9, I'm going to share a little bit about the literacy screener. We do have a waiver in process in 2 school districts. Out of all our school districts, don't use DIBELS 8, but DIBELS 8 is the state assessment, and it is paid for through the Reads Act for all districts. On slide 10, The reasoning behind why we do this, of course, when you look at data, you want to determine which district schools' classrooms need additional support. It really provides information for decision-making at all levels. And you look to analyze the beginning of the year as well as the middle of the year to understand student learning. Are they progressing? Are they not? So you want to always understand so that you can adjust your instruction for that. And of course, that's the last bullet. You want to adjust your systems, plans, and needs to address the student, him or herself. On page 11, these are the different kinds of screeners that students receive. And if you take a look at kindergarten, when you say letter naming fluency, it literally is, can they name their letters? It's a minute test. You know, they're shown letters. Can they name them? The idea behind this is actually automaticity, which allows, if something's automatic, it leaves the cognitive ability of children then to process that information. In math, it would be your math facts, things like that. If you're not using all your brain time to figure out 6 times 7, you're able to move to higher levels. Same is true with reading. The next slide is slide number 12, and this just shares how students are reported after they take these assessments. And they're in different risk categories about paying attention to students and where they are. And I'd like to just share, if you were to take the blue, which is really negligible risk, no risk, minimal risk is at benchmark, students that are progressing well, some risk, and then certainly at risk. If you were to flip those into a bell curve, the red would be on the one side of the bell curve, the blue would be on the other, and the distribution of students in the middle would be the yellow and the green. So that just describes a little bit of that risk in regard to a distribution of students. Page 13 just shares the completion rate of students who have taken the beginning of the middle of the year data and assessments. As you can see, we're not a full complete set, and we like to look at beginning of the year and then middle of the year to compare. Basically, we just want to understand what kids have learned and where they're progressing. And I'm going to share with you on page 14 the actual middle of the year data as compared to the beginning of the year. And these next slides are pretty technical, so I'm going to just share pictures, but the picture's worth 1,000 words, right? Or 10,000 words. So if you take the first slide is the beginning of the year, and the bottom bar, if you will, is the middle of the year. And so you can share that we have moved in the right direction. These are all students K through 3 collectively together. And there's about 24,500 students in this data capture that actually took both assessments, middle and then beginning of the year, to be able to compare. We are moving in the right direction. Certainly, we are not where we want to be. The next slide on page 15 really shares, well, who makes up each of these categories? And early intervention is key, as you can tell on page 15. Our kindergarten at the beginning of the year, really to the beginning of the year, to the middle of the year, made the biggest jump. And that's depicted by K Boy and K Moy. You can take a look at the other grade levels. It is evidence that as students get older, those beginning building block skills become more and more difficult. And I would like you to know that the expectation of a child of what they know at the middle of the year is more than the expectation of a child in any grade level that they know at the beginning. So these are moving assessments. The bar gets higher, the goalpost gets farther away. So they have to continue to improve to meet that mark. It's not a static assessment. It's very dynamic. First grade isn't where we would like it to be. It's pretty much just the same, pretty negligent movement. And then as you can see in third grade, those expectations without those building blocks when kids are actually expected to read by that grade level, it's very difficult. But taking a look at Alaska and looking at overall, page 16, why have we made some of the decisions we've made in regard to just IRIPs and coming back to you in regard to this bill? Alaska, comparatively to the nation, is still behind, but not necessarily out of the ballpark. So this is the middle of the year data. And as you can tell in other states, it is very, where they're catching up and having, you know, success of about a third of the kids, we're still about 40 to 45% of our kids needing improvement in the well below benchmark. Students in the below benchmark, I like to share that this group is, you want to keep an eye on them strategically because you don't really know if they were proficient in the green and slightly fell behind or whether they're actually improving and in the red. So this is important as I share to you the next slide. On page 17, don't fear, I'm going to walk through these just to share. This is the beginning of the year and the middle of the year. And what we have to ask ourselves is, once students assess at the beginning of the year and then the middle of the year, where are they? Where did they go? This is key to understanding the learning. So on the first one where it says grade K, and it has a student population of 3,382 students. Of the students in Alaska who scored at this level in the beginning of the year, by middle of the year, right below that, 69% of them stayed there. 15% moved up, improved to the yellow. 12% of those kids are actually progressing at the middle of the year on benchmark. And then 4 actually went to advanced. That's great progress. However, the reason we would like even kids who were proficient to be assessed at the middle of the year, again, on these 1-minute screeners, is take a look at the third column over where it says 707 students. There were 707 students in kindergarten on benchmark. However, at the middle of the year of those students, they didn't necessarily have to take the assessment according to the statute, but they did take the assessment. And what we found is that 8% of those students actually are now far below, and we should be paying attention to that more. 16% went below benchmark. They're losing progress. And again, the goalpost continues to get further away. And so the idea is that if we assess throughout the year, we can really understand where kids are. In these categories, we're losing about 25% of the kids move to another category. That's why we would like to continue to look throughout the year. But in grade 1, 82% stayed in that category. 14% moved to just below benchmark. And you can tell that's what those lines are. So the number at the top is the N. The bar graph under them with the percentages show where those kids were at the middle of the year. It's a great comparison. I know it's a pretty busy slide, but I can share that with you more. If you move to grades 2 and 3, this is the reason why early intervention is key. These slides generally don't move. If you look at grades 2 and grades 3, at the well below benchmark in grade 2, it's 2,521 students. 87% of them, almost 90%, stayed where they are. It's more difficult. The expectations of children as they grow is more difficult. And third grade rarely moves. It's 91% of those kids still stayed in that category. So that's why for that first adjustment to take a look at kids throughout the year, if those 25% of those kids that we actually did have data on did not assess and didn't participate, we wouldn't know. We could lose those kids. So, again, these are minimal assessments. We would like to be able to assess all kids. And then finally, page 19 is really the progression piece. And this is also a requirement. And it's in the form of a district reading improvement plan. If students score in the well below the red zone, this triggers an action at the school district, and an individualized reading improvement plan is participated in with the parent and the teacher. And they talk about what the plan is to catch a student up, to make up that learning loss or that make up growth, rather. At their grade, however, it triggers, and actually at every grade, it triggers a conversation about non-progression in that IRIP. When an IRIP is done, it also creates a mandatory 10 times that you communicate to give updates to parents throughout the year. So we have, it's not a lack of communication that we're asking about. It's just that final decision making. The IRIPs are created with well below. You also can create one with the yellow zone, if you will, just below. They trigger 10 points of conversations with parents about progress, as well as asking a parent at the end of that year if they continue to have the IRIP, to perhaps have a conversation about non-retention. The ask is that this occurs. It may occur within the middle of the year, 45 days. The ask is that from educators is that for students that may catch up, if they could have that final decision and sign off on that within 15 days of the end of the year, when you actually could consider the end of the year data. So it doesn't eliminate any time during the year to have it. Of course, you're already having 10 conversations, but it would allow utilization of the end of the year data. Third graders who progress to fourth grade, while they're not, if they're in the far below or have an IRIP, do receive 20 hours of summer school or summer planning before they enter fourth grade. And I hope that those were the reasons why we'd like this are couched in understanding the data and student learning. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Representative Fox has a question for you, Commissioner.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, not breaking, just lucky, but our kids didn't have trouble learning how to read. So I don't know what it feels like when it doesn't work. And I'm guessing that the educators have more experience. They better writing. Anyway, question is, do they give parents some sort of an assignment? It would seem to me at the, especially the kindergarten level, that the parents could make a significant contribution. Are they expected to? Are there recommendations? How does it work?
Sure. Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Prox, yes, the IRIP is actually also a suggestion of what you can do as a parent at home to assist with this learning. Because again, in the early stages, they really are about communication, reading, asking questions, building vocabulary, so that when kids do learn sounds, they can relate it back to vocabulary and understanding.
Okay. Yep, I think that's it. Just be good to follow up on my own, see how this works.
Okay, Representative McCormick has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Bishop, for being here this morning. It's always a pleasure to have you here. Got a few questions about this bill. The first one is, how much of the financial burden of this bill is expected to be picked up by school districts as opposed to being paid for by the state?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative McCormick, the actual fiscal note on this bill is just the $6,000 for additional drafting of regulations in regard to reading in general. You know, that is a core mission of school districts. I can share that the Alyeska Reading Institute has put $3.4 million back to school districts with another $1 million for summer school. So I do know that specific data, but I can share other inputs that the department has provided for school districts in regard to materials and training. So I can share what DEED has done in regard to paying for reading. We had to do that prior to the READS Act, and we'll see where it is after the READS Act.
Okay, so right now it just looks like the fiscal note is for $6,000 just to implement the policy. Okay.
Thank you.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Sure.
Through the chair. So all the districts I represent and other districts that I've heard, really in Bush, Alaska, they're drowning right now with the READS Act, and frankly not being able to fund it. So I'm just curious if you feel like with that theme right now, do you think it's really appropriate to try and implement more to that when we can't really keep up with the current requirements?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative McCormick, I don't think that this is asking of additional work. This is just clarity pretty much in the language. But to your point, I have also been an advocate for making direct investments in the type of work that we want to have occur. So I would concur that I would love additional investment in reading.
Thank you.
Do you have another one?
Yes, I do. But you know what? I'm going to let other folks take a stab added.
Oh, that's Representative McCormick.
Thank you, through the chair. The other question I had was, I'm just curious, and I think I'm kind of showing my ignorance through this question. So all of these requirements or all these reading requirements that would need to be met would be by English standards, correct? So in other words, like someone who might be going to a UPIC immersion school couldn't, in theory, be able to read in Yuktun and meet these requirements. Is that correct?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative McCormick, at the present time, we're actually creating screeners, these same exact screeners in six different languages to be able to assess students in their home language first. And that work is actually with the University of Oregon, I believe. Dibbles is creating that right now. So to your point, we're moving in that direction to be able to have kids and their understanding of reading in their home first language.
Thank you. Through the chair. If I could just get a list of those languages, I'm not putting you on the spot and asking that for now, right now, but if I could just get an idea.
Thank you, Representative McCormick. Could you get that to us at the Education Committee and then we'll distribute? Thank you. And we'll bring it back on the record for you, too. We'll get that to you, Mr. or Representative McCormick. Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, back on page 13, or I guess slide 13, homeschool students, I can't remember where they fall in the READS Act.
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Hemshoot, this would include all students are required, and the ask is in for K through 3 to participate. But we do have a statute in right now that does allow parents to choose not to be assessed. But the screener is part of the, I guess, for lack of a better word, mandatory assessments in the state. But again, we balance that with a parent's right to decide whether to have their student assessed or not.
Is it possible, through the chair, thank you, is it possible to get a breakdown of this information to reflect which kids are homeschooled? Is that possible?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Hemshoot, we don't. We can provide those data to you by district and by school, and in that manner, you could find out where the students went to school.
Follow up?
Thank you. Continue.
Thank you. Through the chair. I'm a little foggy. Life's been moving really fast. The READS Act has been in effect on the ground in schools just this school year. Is that correct?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Hemshoot, yes, this is the first year that the accountability system is in place. This is the second year. The first year was building capacity, passing regulation, but yes, you are correct. This is the first year that the accountability system for the READS Act is in place.
Can we hold for just 1 minute? I want to take a brief at ease. Calling the Education Committee back to order. Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, I'm a little concerned about making changes to something that hasn't been in place very long. Were these changes brought forth from the field? Were districts asking for this? Or how? I see the data that you're using. I'd love to have 2 or 3 years of data before we make changes. So how did we arrive at the decision to change it within the first year of implementation?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Hemshoot, yes, these asks, there were additional asks as well, but we weren't able to bring those forward at this time. These were from practitioners on the ground, especially the one with the IRIP. It is a difficult conversation to request a parent in February to remain in that grade level. And teachers said, if I do that and the child, it negatively affects their hope and their improvement. And so they did request specifically not to not have the conversations. The conversations still occur, but that final decision-making to utilize the end of the year data, that was very specific from teachers themselves who are on the ground making these decisions and having the conversations. In regard to the assessment, that was at the district level simply because they, if understanding the data that kids move so much, that they didn't want to miss anyone at the end of the year that they hadn't watched, that would then be caught at the end of the year and they wouldn't even know.
Thank you. One more follow-up. If I could, can you provide us with the results of the what are those called, focus groups or wherever the data was collected from, so that we can get a sense of, you know, was it from rural Alaska as well as urban Alaska, and who all is asking for this, so that it informs a little bit better where the request is coming from.
Yes, through the chair, yes, we can do that.
And once we get that, I will distribute it and we can send it out to everybody on the committee. It looks like Representative McCormick has a few more questions.
Thank you, through the chair. My other question, Commissioner Bishop, to your knowledge, how well do these new requirements gel with current curriculum that schools have in place? I know I can think of one school right now where this kind of maybe counteracts like their approach to teaching their students. So I'm just curious. It's kind of an open-ended question, but if you could speak to that.
Sure. Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative McCormick, I'm just in regard to your question, are you speaking the READS Act in general or these? I don't necessarily, I would have to look into that because this is part of the READS Act. And so I would believe that you might be speaking to the overall READS Act if it doesn't, but it is part of the science of reading and understand how children learn to process and read in English or in other languages.
Thank you. Through the chair, I guess just in response, that was kind of about what this bill would implement. I can say, without a shadow of a doubt, the READS Act in general has gotten in the way of curriculum that we have. But my follow-up question, you know, on slide 19, you talked about getting the parent involved. And maybe these questions were brought up when the READS Act was being discussed. I trust that my predecessor did a fine job of asking these questions. But I guess I'm still just kind of like very confused what happens for a child who maybe doesn't have parents who are super involved or maybe even works like a 12-day midnight to 7 shift and doesn't really have the opportunity to work with their children and their curriculum. I'm just curious what happens to a child when they don't maybe have a parent that can be super involved.
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative McCormick, of course that happens. And I was a mom who worked, so I'm a working mom as well. And of course it's not left only to a parent, but it's engaging the parent. Parent support at home is probably a paramount feature of successful children. And so what we want to do is to, I think the intent of the bill was to not exclude parents with the new language, but include them. However, the IRIPS or that plan that you would discuss with the parent has changes that the teacher's going to do, something that the child can do. It's really a collective effort to understand if we want to be at this level and be proficient readers, what is it that we can do together? And so speaking from the school, that IRIP triggers an additional 30 minutes outside the school day so that they're not pulled from kind of other activities and fun stuff to be able to get caught up. It looks at outside the school day tutoring. It looks at other progress monitoring, small groups, large groups. It's really a local level. That's what's the multi-tiered system of support is actually delivered at the local level in the district and or at the school level. So they problem solve with the people who actually can make a difference. It's not the department saying you must do this or this bill. It's saying of the people involved who care most about this child, what can we do together to progress their learning?
Good. Thank you, through the chair. I just wanted to thank Commissioner Bishop for participating in my lightning round. Thank you.
No worries. Representative Story, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard, through the chair. Welcome, both of you, and good to see you, Commissioner. I was wondering, of all the data you have now, if it's not required to do this, you have the data set. So how does that come about?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Story, this isn't all the students, it's about 80% of the students. And at DEED, this is a large enough number for us to make decisions. But again, this was actually spoken to at the local level. If they have a student who progresses the very first time and they never assess them again, you know, they might miss that they're declining because we just move forward. And so that the N is large enough for us at our level. What was asked at, especially to make an impact, was we really want to look at students at every level, because as you saw, even in kids who were at grade level, 25% of them
slid back by mid-year.
A follow-up,
please.
So I'm assuming teachers are doing other assessments. We have our AK Star assessment, or I'm not sure of the new name that we're calling it, because what is the new name that we are?
Through the chair to Representative Story, you are correct. It is AK Star. It was PEAKS prior to that. So
thank you. Through the chair. So I would think the teachers who are doing the assessments would know through other assessments if their kids were falling back. And why, when we were doing the READS Act, one of the reasons why they only did the beginning year was a lot of kids are doing well, and they thought they would save targeted instructional time for the kids who were struggling by not having to teach the kids who are in the advanced level. And so I guess my question is, when you talk about there was a stakeholder group too, have you gone back to the stakeholder group to talk to them about the changes that you want to make to get their impact?
Sure. Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Story, the stakeholder group, and looking at that is in process, you know, to gather them back. That's actually part of the request and the ask to gather that group back together as it was prior years. But I would say that something that you said, I think every child, no matter where you are on your level, you deserve to learn a year for a year. So I think for kids who are even advanced, because many advanced kids are sometimes who are they're the ones who progress because they're not taught something new. And so this just demonstrates, these are quick 1 minute, you know, assessments on those things, like on page 11, is it in vocabulary? Is it in oral reading fluency? Like, what are the parts very quickly that I can tell? It's very similar to a temperature. You know, let me take your temperature to see if I can, in a doctor's office. The AK Star is really, we do take MAP in third grade, and we take AK Star at the end of third grade. That's the final assessment. That comprehension is much more, it's much more comprehensive, that assessment. These are individual discrete skills to know that are building blocks. So you want to test the individual discrete skill to see if they're on track like everyone else to be able to move forward. And you just want to know if it, have they slid, then that is the time that the teacher makes a response to the student, not the student response to the teacher. And so it was a minimal ask. Things can move on without it. It was just an interest to know how are all students doing, especially perhaps those that are in the advanced categories and proficient. Are we losing them because we're not focusing on them?
Follow up. I'd appreciate it if you could give me an example of doing an IRIP. You said a minute, so it's like a minute on each of the different six categories, and the teacher would just take a group of students to the side of the room?
Through Co-Chair Allard to Representative Story, the individualized reading plan is actually a plan that you write up that's separate. These are the screeners, and I've given them, if you take oral reading fluency, basically you actually are assessing students on the curriculum, the things that you want them to be able to do at the end, which is reading. And you would have a paragraph, and you sit next to a child. You just pull them aside and you give them a paragraph. You have a timer. You time them for 1 minute and you just ask them to read. You actually mark the correct words versus incorrect words over time. And of course, there's a difference cognitively going on of a student who can read 15 words in first grade or kindergarten in a minute, and kids that actually you would do the reading one at the end of first grade. But, you know, their skills to be able to do that with automaticity is going to determine on trackness. And if they don't, it doesn't mean that they're not on track. It just means that that would trigger another look for a teacher to have a conversation. So it's, and you do three of those. You then pull out another passage and say, read for me for a minute. And you mark the words that they get wrong in that minute, and then you have a score, and there is a set, and so maybe it's letter naming fluency, letter sound fluency. It's still say these sounds. You're showing them sounds, and you're seeing if the kids can repeat the sounds and make those sounds. Then you get a score, and then you look at what should children of this age be able to do if they were on track. So it's not done in a group. It's you just pull a child, very similar to what teachers, you know, do. to assess, like when you're walking around a classroom, you're looking at what kids do. So I hope I did okay to explain that, but that's what a reading fluency is.
Thank you. And we're going to be moving on now. I'm going to be opening up for public testimony, Commissioner. So I'm going to go ahead. And at this time, I'd like to open up for the public for the floor. Is there anybody in the room who would like to testify? Is there anyone in the audience online wishing to testify? Hearing none, public testimony is now closed. Having heard the presentation, we will hold HB 274. I am setting up an amendment deadline for HB 274 for Thursday, March the 14th at 5 p.m. Our next meeting will be on Friday, March the 15th to continue and work on HB 55, HB 183, and HB 274. Having concluded our business for today at 9:44, we are adjourned.